Welcome to Season 2, Episode 74 of the Banded About podcast series.
My guest today is not a drummer, nor is he a percussionist. So why am I chatting with him? Well, the reason for this is that he plays an instrument that I love, one that unfortunately not enough local musicians specialise in for me to be able to make a series out of it. My guest has recently returned to South Australia. He is a multi-instrumentalist, vocalist, and record producer. During his time in the US, he toured with his band, The Green Cards, opening for various acts including Robert Earl Keane, Lyle Lovett, Willie Nelson, and Bob Dylan, just to name a few. Prior to leaving Australia, he won the Australian National Bluegrass Championship 4 years in a row. But before I introduce today's guest, it's time for me to play the Banded About theme song, which was written and recorded for the Banded About podcast series by the very talented Catherine Lambert and Michael Mitzi Bryant. Banded About. It is with great pleasure that I welcome Kim Warner. Welcome, Kim, and thank you for making time to chat with me today.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you, Di. Nice to be here.
Let's start from the beginning, Kim. You were born in South Australia.
Yes, I was.
What area did you grow up in?
Grew up in Campbelltown, in the northeastern suburbs there. Went to East Martin Primary School and went to Nord High School. That's about my upbringing in a nutshell there.
Okay. Now, you come from a musical background. Your father was one of Australia's foremost bluegrass and country musicians.
Yep.
And I believe he was instrumental in bringing bluegrass music to Australia.
Yeah, that's true, actually. I should really find out what year he started. He started playing the banjo probably in his early 20s, I think. I heard Flat and Scruggs in a record store, actually. He went tells me he was going in to buy a Buddy Holly record or an Elvis Presley record or something like all the kids were doing, and he heard Foggy Mountain Breakdown and said, "What is this? I never heard anything like this before." Bought the record and shortly after bought a banjo, went to Kangaroo Island for a couple of weeks, taught himself the basics of how to start playing the banjo, and has, you know, been in love with it and loved bluegrass and country music ever since.
Well, that's great. Is anyone else in the family involved in the music industry?
No, not at all. No, we all love music. Mum loves music. My brother loves music, but no one ever sort of took it up to play anything, just Dad and I, but we certainly got to play a lot of music together when I was growing up. Now that I'm back here, party continues.
Yeah, it's great. Now, I imagine it would have been your dad who had quite an influence in you playing.
Yeah. It was just around so much, you know, even before I was playing, if you will, because there was just Dad would have jam sessions with his mates and I'd always be going to gigs. And I think I was 10 or 11 around then. I started playing violin and Dad would just teach me fiddle tunes and such. And I think not long after I started, he'd get me up when he was playing and we'd play a song or two together. So certainly in the infancy of my life journey as a musician, your dad was very, very instrumental in that.
So when you were at school, did you study music at all?
I didn't really study anything, Di, to be honest. I wasn't a good student, let's just say that. No, I did take music classes and such at school, but it wasn't really anything. Sadly, there wasn't really anything that I can look back on now and say I learned this and this and this. All my learning musically was those early days with Dad and then just listen to records. And I found that I had a reasonably good ear and was able to listen to music and pick up music and learn things that way, and then just joining bands and everything that I've done since, just I've learned everything from other people and things that have rubbed off on me and stuff like that. So not a lot of formal study, unfortunately. I did go to South Plains College in West Texas for 1 year back in, 94, 95. And I did study then. I studied with some really greats in the bluegrass world, Alan Mundy and Joe Carr. They taught me a lot of stuff then, and I was around other kids my age really for the first time that were playing the music that I really liked, which was predominantly bluegrass music at the time. That was really my first and only formal studying of the music, other than the life experiences that I've gained from being a touring musician for the best part of 30 years now.
So what was the first job that you had after you left school?
I haven't had many, I can tell you that. Not real jobs. I worked at a service station for a little while, but I soon got a job touring with Brian Young, the Brian Young Show, touring Outback Australia. And it was great. I did 1 year with Youngie, two four-month stints, and it was almost solely Aboriginal communities in the centre of Australia, Western Australia, South Australia. And that was amazing. It was just great to see that part of Australia and get to see all those incredible, unique people out there played music. So that was my first taste of touring. It was shortly after that that I went to America for that year. And then I come back and the first real gig that I got was touring with Lee Kernaghan. That was really it. I've hardly worked a day in my life, to be honest. I've avoided manual labour the whole time. Just been very fortunate to be able to get by playing music.
Yeah, definitely. Because not everybody has that opportunity, do they?
No, I'm fortunate. You do got to work hard at it, and you got to be bringing something to the party, I guess. There are plenty of great players and musicians out there that don't have that opportunity, so I've been lucky.
Yeah. So what was the first band that you joined?
My friend Becky Cole and I had a band. I think it lasted two shows, but we were called the Silver Streak, and that was when we were kids, maybe 14, 15 years old. And I just a few other little rock bands and things that I dabbled with, and I can't for the life of me think of the name of them. It's going back so far now, but the Brian Young Show was the first real thing that I joined where I got paid to play music. And then I had a band called, pushing the brain cells here, Kickin' Grass, which is such a great name. For a bluegrass band, that was my band in West Texas for a year with some buddies out there at school. And then I came back, and then the real professional gig that I got was playing with Lee. And that was 95, 96, 97, around that time.
So that was your first major gig?
Yeah, that was the real first professional gig where we got out there and playing big shows and real production and real arrangements, you know, like learning proper songs and parts and putting on a professional performance. That was certainly the first real big one for me.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Kim, do you have a memorable gig story that you'd like to share?
There's many. There's just countless, really, to be honest. I've had so many. I mean, going to America and forming our band, the Green Cards, and then getting on festivals and things for the first time, playing those festivals. I remember we played a great festival called Melfest in the United States, which is in North Carolina, which is a very big roots music festival, bluegrass roots music festival. And I remember we were about to go on, play our first set at Melfest, and one of my lifelong heroes was a guy by the name of John Cowan that was in the band called Newgrass Revival, who were the real impetus for me wanting to play the mandolin with Sam Bush being the mandolin player. And I saw Cowan over there, and I was like, holy moly, I thought, good God, that's John Cowan there. And then I heard him turn to the guy next to him and said, what time do the Green Cards go on? I was like, whoa, that's crazy. He's here to see us. So that was very, very memorable memory. And I've become great friends with John, who has also been a member of the Doobie Brothers for the last 20 years. In recent times, Robert Earl Keane, who's been my boss the last 7-8 years in America, that I was there, and a great, great American artist. We got the great fortune of opening for George Strait, and was the show that was ourselves and Lyle Lovett and George Strait. We were on stage, and it was our band, our full band, and Lyle's full band on the same stage at the same time, and we'd play a song, they'd play a song, and that was our set for an hour back and forth, and the crowd was 80,000 people at the Houston Rodeo, so that was something I'll never forget, getting that experience in that magnitude and playing with all those incredible musicians that were in Lyle's band and our band, and then getting to see George for a couple of hours. Pretty hard to beat that experience.
Absolutely.
In those sort of first couple of years of the Green Cards, when we were going out and playing, we had some great fortunes playing some shows with my hero Sam Bush and his band, getting up on stage with him and playing with him for the first time. It was amazing. We did a 7-week, 31-date tour, I think it was back in 2005, where our band, the Green Cards, opened for Bob Dylan and Willie Nelson. So that was pretty amazing, getting to see that every night and be a part of that show in baseball stadiums every night. Pinch yourself moments like that where, wow, we're getting an opportunity to do this and be on this stage with those artists was something that, yeah, those memories will stick with me forever, and they were just great opportunities for us. such great occasions to be a musician.
Yeah, definitely. That would have been truly amazing.
Yeah, it was.
Austin is known as the live music capital of the world.
So yes,
what
indeed.
Was it like living there and being amongst all of that all of the time?
It was fantastic. It was really like a city festival every week when we first moved there. It's funny, Austin is a sister city to Adelaide. I didn't know that at the time. Driving in there for the first time, I came in from the west and we were coming down toward the city and I was like, God, this looks so much like Adelaide, this place. You know, I had the river running through and the city on the other side and it felt a lot like Adelaide. But then the scene there was incredible and it still is great. Of course, we all got knocked around the last few years with COVID and such. It was a pretty amazing place because I can't think of too many cities where you could go out till 2 a.m. to 40 or 50 clubs and watch music, you know, have your choice of anything from Texas singer-songwriter music, country music, bluegrass, jazz, hip-hop, heavy metal, rock and roll, blues, whatever, anything. It was a city that offered so much. It was a really great place to live. The energy was great there for music. It was a wonderful vehicle for original artists because there were so many outlets to get out and play, and the people in that town want to hear original music. You know, they're not just there to sort of see you sing cover songs all night or honky-tonk stuff, although that is there, of course. Such a great place for original music. And for us to go there and then, you know, form our band, the Green Cards, there and start out in Austin was perfect because when you're starting out, you need somewhere to play. You know, it's no point having a band just being in the garage. You know, you need somewhere to get out and play in front of people. So we had the opportunity to sort of start playing 2, 3, 4 nights a week in Austin and really hone your skills and create your sound. Thankfully, it's coming back too because just before COVID hit, I was telling a friend the other day, I was touring with Robert Earl Keane. We play about 120 shows a year, so I was on the road a lot. And then when I come back, I'd still be able to play 3, 4 times a week in town. So it was pretty amazing to continually work on your craft and to get to do that. Live music capital of the world, yeah, like few others, I can assure you.
It would be absolutely amazing to be a part of that.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
Now, you just mentioned the pandemic.
Yeah.
How has the pandemic impacted you?
Well, put a lot of things in perspective, I can tell you that much. I had a lot of time, like we all did, to think about what the path ahead, what means the most to you, you know, and I think that's the thing that it affected me the most. It's the reason that we're back here in Australia. Loved my time in America, but it's sort of that 2 years that stopped everything, wasn't able to travel, wasn't able to come home, locked out of my home country. That didn't feel good. And then, of course, I hadn't seen my folks and my family for it ended up being about 6 years by the time we hit Australia this time. So it made us really feel that we probably should get back here and needed back closer to family and friends and where we grew up for the next part of our life. So in that sense, personally, it had a huge effect. Musically was really, really difficult because it just didn't really exist, particularly performing live, which is the part of music that I have come to realize that I love the most is performing live in front of people and with people. I remember how it was when it first hit that everyone was doing these performances on Zoom and so forth, you know, and we'd stand there and watch people on our computer screens. You support each other as best you can, but for me it got old quickly because there just wasn't that interaction, you know. I tend to be able to enjoy myself as much whether I'm playing, like I said earlier, to that George Strait show where there's just a ridiculous amount of people that you've never seen before in a crowd, or playing a small club to 40 or 50 people. To me, it doesn't make a huge amount of difference because I'm just love playing music so much and you still get that feeling back and forth between you and the people that are watching you and the people that you're sharing the stage with. So taking that away was really difficult. Some people used their time really well. A lot of people made records and such. And for me, I have to be inspired for that to happen. And it wasn't a very inspiring time for me. I was able to get over it eventually and dive in and come up with some things that helped me musically going forward. But it did take a while. Yeah, it was a tough time.
Is there a positive at all that came from the lockdowns that wouldn't have occurred for you otherwise?
It's a good question. It's a really good question. Musically, I'm not sure there's anything that I can put down to having 2 years of not performing that's positive, but it did, like I said earlier, it pushed the move of us coming back to Australia probably quicker than it would have, got us back here and got us in a position to sort of look at the next phase of our life and get back to Australia. I'm not sure if we would have come back as quickly. We've had a great time of it and we had really good careers going in America. So I think that's something that I look at that probably was a positive. Yeah, musically it was pretty challenging. Although I did one thing actually, I did purchase an amazing mandolin that I found online during the pandemic. And I'm not sure if it was because of the pandemic that I got this instrument at a much more affordable price than it should have been. So I'll take that as a positive now that I think about it, because I've got this beautiful Italian mandolin that's just incredibly inspiring and I love playing it. Become my number one instrument. unfortunately for someone else, they might have had to part with it because of tough times.
It's nice to have at least one positive.
Exactly.
Now, with the mandolin, it's used quite rarely in most genres of music. Why do you think that is?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, it's only in really modern popular music that it's used sparingly. If we wind the clock back a few hundred years, there were mandolin orchestras and things, classical music, where the mandolin would have been a very prominent instrument in the forefront for a lot of people. Then, of course, rock and roll came along and hasn't been used a lot in rock and roll. You then look at Led Zeppelin, who used the mandolin quite a bit. Rod Stewart had mandolin on records like Maggie May. And then REM, Losing My Religion, they'd used mandolin on a few things. So there's instances where it's been in the forefront, but certainly it isn't like being a guitar player, a bass player, a drummer. Why that is, I don't know. I see it in my mind as something that could front any sort of situation. I don't know. It's a good question. I can't answer why, but it's certainly not what you expect most kids to walk into a store and grab. But in America, it's far more prolific than it is here. It just comes with the fact that people grew up with a genre of music like bluegrass, where the mandolin is absolutely at the forefront. Bill Monroe, the creator of bluegrass music, is a mandolin player, and the music really doesn't exist without that. And then you've got the population and the history of it. People are just born into it in America, a little different than they are here. But there's some really good mandolin players in Australia, some young guys that have come along in the last sort of 5 or 10 years that play really, really well. So hopefully we'll all be hearing a lot more mandolin in this country.
I know, I definitely love the sound of it. It just stands out.
It's certainly a unique tone unto itself. It doesn't sound like anything else. It's not unlike the banjo. I mean, a lot of instruments have a characteristic, no mistaking, when you hear the mandolin, that's for sure.
Definitely. Kim, is there a band that you wish that you'd had the opportunity to play with?
Yeah. How long have we got here? You think, oh, you know, I'd love to have played in the Beatles or with Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers or something. Well, there was no role for something like that. If there was ever an artist that I'd looked at and thought, you know, you push yourself towards one day, maybe it would have been maybe Leonard Cohen. Leonard Cohen had a great guy playing with him called Harvey A. Maas, who played these kind of lute family instruments, is the best way I can describe it. All these beautiful textures, and of which some instruments I play, mandolin, bouzouki, ukulele type sounding things. And it was just such a big part of Leonard's sound, particularly in his live touring band. So, you know, I like to try and set myself goals like that, even though they may not be achievable. It's something to work on and put yourself in a position, and you'll develop musical ideas and such from that, from imagining yourself in a role, if you will. So, yeah, Leonard Cohen was always something that I thought. But I've been so fortunate to play with people that maybe I didn't think I'd join their band, but people that I've grown up listening to and have been responsible for me being the player that I am today. And I talk about Sam Bush. I've got to sit in with his band a number of times and hear him with us. People like Tim O'Brien. Oh, these are all people in the sort of bluegrass genre. And Lyle Lovett. I've got to play with Lyle Lovett. Obviously, Robert L. Keane, who I toured with. So I've been fortunate.
Right. If you could only offer one tip to a brand new player, what would it be?
Enjoy it. Play for enjoyment. It's the only way you're ever going to get to play a lot and play well, and falling in love with the instrument. You know, I think learning something that you want to learn, I think, is so important. I think a lot of young people go to lessons and they might get something put in front of them and it's not really something that they're heart. Enjoying it is the most important thing, because that's what it's all about, is enjoying it. And then if you enjoy something, whether it's playing music or footy or whatever it is, you enjoy it, you fall in love with it, you work hard at it, you want to get better at it, and you will get better at it, and you'll improve, and then it'll become more enjoyable and you'll fall more in love with it. I'm going to say practice, yeah, sure, but you're not going to practice if you don't love what you do. So the enjoyment is the most important thing of it.
Great. Kim, who are your top three local players?
Well, I don't know too many guys in Adelaide because I've been away for a long time. There's a guy called Paddy Montgomery who lives in Melbourne. He's a fantastic mandolin player. And a guy called Justin, I'm going to pronounce his last name wrong. I think it's Vitches, but I might get that wrong. He's a wonderful player too out of Melbourne. Andrew Claremont, who's a great native South Australian, is a wonderful mandolin player as well. So that's three off the top of my head.
Thank you. I wasn't sure whether you would be aware of you being away for so long. So,
oh, well, yeah. I have, but I still try and keep in touch with what's going on back here, particularly when people start playing the mandolin and playing the type of music that sort of I was drawn to. So there's a few guys around that play really well. Paddy and Justin are two young guys that just really rip. So, and they're in Melbourne, so I'm looking forward to jumping in and getting to do some playing with them. And, yeah, Andrew's been a wonderful player for much longer than I've been playing, so, and been a good friend to me and an early influence on me.
Excellent. Okay, I've been asking my drummers this question, and it would apply to you as well, so I'm going to ask you, see how we go.
Yeah.
I want you to choose the three most important to you from the following five.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got groove.
Uh-huh.
Creativity.
Yeah.
Chops.
Yeah.
Technique and time. Out of those five, which three are most important to you?
Oh, boy. I can't pick one. I just go with all of the above, really, because it all just goes hand in hand. I don't think anyone that I love that we've spoken about or haven't spoken about would have any of that missing from their playing, you know, all of the great players. I mean, there's certainly certain people that have, so some guys might have better tone than I would think than some other guys, and some guys' feel is just like, you know, crazy good, and other guys is good but not quite there with that. So I would be lying if I chose one, but I really strive to work on every one of those things for myself. Not that I'm perfect at any of it. Without any of those things, then you're not going to be the complete musician. So I just have to plead the fifth, if that or go with the five.
Okay, fair enough. Kim, if you could invite any musicians to play a concert with you anywhere in the world.
Wow.
Who would you call?
Dead
Where would it be held? What genre would the band be performing?
Here, still on this earth?
It doesn't matter. We can resurrect for this scenario.
It would be probably be a pretty wild amalgamation of musicians. I would probably go with, wow, goodness gracious. I'd say, wow, that's impossible. I think I might just say I'll just play with Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. I'll just take that band and I could just play some mandolin there and let them tell me when to play and what they want me to do, and I'll see if I can fit in with them. I'll be fine with that. That'd be great.
Yeah, he was wonderful, wasn't he? I got to see him when he opened for Bob Dylan here back in
Oh, wow. Yeah. One of the most, one of the greatest tours in rock and roll history,
surely.
It was
amazing.
Yeah, I would have. You know, I tell you what, it's funny. If you had said to me if I could have seen any tour, I may have said that tour, because Dylan and Tom are my two all-time favourites, the absolute brilliance that they've brought with these incredible catalogue of songs, soundtrack to your life sort of stuff. So that one, if I could have ever seen a tour, I may well have gone with that. So good taste there.
It was fabulous.
Yeah, amazing.
Is there something that you've really tried to play that you couldn't get right, or you weren't satisfied with the way that you played it?
Oh, God. I mean, again, how long do you have? Holy mackerel. All the time. And so I push myself at it. Classical stuff's hard. I really love classical music, but it's really, really difficult to get the nuances right, especially for someone like myself that I don't read well. I've taught myself in the last year to read very, very slowly, but I'm better than I was, so... The nuances of classical music are difficult to get right, the phrases and the shifts in dynamics and stuff. To be honest, any music's difficult to play well. Even what seems like the simplest form of music is so difficult to play well. Let's look at AC/DC, for example. It's a lot of it's just three-chord rock and roll, and you think, oh, it's just four on the floor for the drums and, you know, E, A, D on the guitar. But there's never been a band close to being able to do that with what they do. It's just the pocket is absolutely incredible. They've got everything right. And it's very, very hard. I hear people say, oh, it's so easy to play AC/DC stuff. Oh, you would never hope in hell trying to play in that band. Yeah, it's difficult. Yeah. So I think playing music well is really, really difficult in any form, any genre. Of course, a lot of stuff, you know, bluegrass is really fast at times. A lot of people struggle to play very quickly on acoustic instruments in particular. It's very challenging. So that in itself brings its challenges. I spoke about classical music, you know, any form, jazz. Jazz is incredibly difficult to play because you have to have such an understanding of theory to play jazz well. So I don't really think there's a genre that's easy to play. You know, it all takes, you know, something really time-consuming to get it right, and you've got to be locked inside the song, even just playing if it's just a singer-songwriter, playing correctly and something that pays tribute to the song in the right way. Is difficult. There's no such thing as something that's easy to play. There's simpler versions of songs or simpler songs, but it's still not easy to play them. It's a tough thing.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned earlier that you've recently moved back to South Australia.
Yeah.
And you've got a run of shows lined up, as well as being inducted into the Music Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
What are your plans once this run is completed?
Well, my wife and I are going to move to Melbourne, actually. We've never lived in Melbourne. We've been wanting to live in Melbourne for a long time. So we're going to move to Melbourne and really looking forward to that. I really like the city itself and it's a bigger place than Adelaide. So I think there's a lot to offer. A lot of great music has come and does come out of Melbourne. So I'm looking forward to, you know, meeting up some musicians that I know and getting to know a whole lot more that I don't, and artists, and tapping into the local scene in Melbourne, just starting from there, you know. Sort of starting from scratch coming home. So it's pretty exciting to me. I'm looking at it as a really exciting new adventure. Firstly, I'm so excited to be playing these shows. I love playing. So getting the induction is really humbling and really nice to be deemed worthy of that. So I'm very thankful for that and getting to play these shows coming up with my friends meanwhile back at the ranch, play some shows together. So all of that's going to be really, really great fun. And then go to Melbourne and just dive in, see what we can make of it.
Awesome. Kim, where do you see yourself in the next 10 years?
Oh, boy. Well, I'll be playing music in whatever capacity that is, playing the mandolin. I'm also really, really keen on learning a lot about making instruments. I've been doing some luthier courses and I intend to continue doing that too. I love working on instruments. I've worked on my own instruments for the past sort of 5 years or so, and it's something I'm really passionate about. I really love it, so I want to learn how to take care of instruments well and set instruments up well, repair instruments, and then maybe potentially even make some. As well as playing, that's something that I'm really keen on working on. And hopefully in 10 years' time, I'll be able to play you a mandolin that I've made.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Great. I look forward to hearing that.
Me too.
What do you hope to have achieved before you retire from playing altogether?
Playing-wise, I'd love to look back at it. I've already think we've achieved quite a bit.
Definitely, you know, have achieved quite a bit.
I think the green cards have achieved more than I probably thought we would have when we first started. So really thankful for that. Now it's just about development as a player still. I just want to continually develop and learn as much as I can. So I'd love to look back and think that there's some things, you know, with some other people that I look back on, I think, boy, that was great. I had a great time doing that. And more recordings. I've got a whole bunch of songs that I've written in the last 5 years or so since I recorded my last album. I want to make another solo record before too long. I'd love to pursue the solo career as much as anything. I think that's sort of the thing musically that I'm most keen on is playing as a solo artist and trying to develop that. You know, you see someone like, you know, Tommy Emmanuel, and I'm not comparing myself to Tommy by any means, but you look at what Tommy's been able to achieve and how good he is and how he can hold a crowd and put on a show for 2 hours just playing guitar. Well, you know, when I look at it and think I want to do that, you know, I want to get there. So that's the goal, is to try and push yourself to get anywhere near that. And Tommy's the king. He's probably the best in the world at playing a one-man show. So, yeah, a bunch of stuff like that. I like developing the solo show, developing myself as an artist and hopefully push myself to be a much better mandolin and instrumentalist. Yeah.
Before we end our chat today, I'm going to ask Kim 20 quick random questions, or as many as we can get through in the space of 2 minutes to close the interview. Are you ready, Kim?
I am.
Okay. Your time starts now. What was the easiest song you learnt to play on the mandolin?
Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star.
What are the three common styles of mandolin?
Bluegrass, shoro, classical.
What was the first album that you purchased?
AC/DC, Who Made Who.
On which Led Zeppelin song did John Paul Jones play the mandolin?
I think he played on a couple, but he definitely played on Going to California.
Black Dog.
He played on Black Dog?
Yes. Which US city is Adelaide's sister city?
Oh, I believe that's Austin, Texas.
Correct. Name a band you wish you'd seen perform live.
The Beatles.
Which string breaks the most on a mandolin?
The A string.
True or false? Steve Earle's song, Copperhead Road, is about a Vietnam War veteran who returns to Tennessee to sell marijuana.
I'll say yes.
Correct. What was the first concert that you went to?
It was the Mark O'Connor.
Who played the mandolin on the recorded Rolling Stones version of Love in Vain?
Is it Ronnie Wood?
Raikouta.
Oh, Raikouta, yes.
Your favourite album?
Impossible. Tom Petty, Wildflowers.
What is the title of the first Monty Python feature film?
Meaning of Life.
And now for something completely different. Vinyl or CDs?
Oh, no, vinyl.
Which REM song has a mandolin in it?
Yeah, we touched on that. It's Losing My Religion.
Yep. Name one thing you cannot live without.
My mandolin.
What was the last concert that you went to?
The Rolling Stones.
What is your biggest fear?
Heights.
Oh, we're out of time. Okay, hang on, let me just get rid of that. Thank you once again, Kim, for joining me for the Bandit About podcast today. You've been great to chat to, and I hope that everyone who listens finds this as enjoyable as I did.
Oh, thanks, Di. It's been a pleasure talking to you today.
My pleasure. All information and links relating to today's interview can be found in the show notes. And if you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, please share the link with your friends. Until next week, it's goodbye from me, Di, Bandit About, proudly supporting live music. Bye.
Bye.